Good morning, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for being here to our service. Welcome to those here in the pews and to those joining us by the web camera. Particularly welcome to anyone who's feeling a little bit below par today. I hope you will enjoy the service and feel part of a community. And this is our service where we sort of remember deceased loved ones. And again, before we start our service, that we just pause to remember those currently suffering so much from war. We begin with our opening words. Holy and beautiful the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember loved ones in absence, to give thanks for all the gifts we receive, for family, friends, and community, for peace. Three unseen guests attend: faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them space. Our chalice lighting. There are times in every life when our light goes out. Often it is the spark from another person that rekindles the light within us. Each of us has cause to be grateful to those who have rekindled the light in us. As the days grow darker, we light our chalice. May its light inspire us and its warmth give us hope. Our chalice light, our first hymn this morning is 360. Here we have gathered side by side, hymn number 360.
Thank you.
Let us pray. God of life and love, source of all things lovely and true, we thank you for the gift of life, for which is ours, not because we made it, but because we received it. You have given it to us through other people, through those who lived in ancient times and who labored before us, and through our families, our teachers, our friends, and through some who just passed by and never knew they had given so much. We thank you for this wonderful gift. We shall never be old enough to earn it, but may we be wise enough to cherish it, and may we think truly and love faithfully and strive nobly so that others may have the gift because we lived. We remember that those who cared for us and nurtured us and protected us, they are always with us. Those who have loved us unreservedly, they are always with you. Those we have loved deeply, they are always with us. Those who inspired us to greater things, they are always with us. Those who have listened to us when we were struggling and helped us guide us on the right track are always with us. Those who shared their wisdom with us and enabled us to see more of the truth are always with you. Those to whom we have to say goodbye, they are always with us. Can we now say together the prayer that Jesus taught us? It unites Christians of all denominations. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, for ever and ever. Amen. Paul is our reader this morning.
Good morning, all. It's very hard to find something to read from this wonderful series of books called The Poetry Pharmacy. And it basically is poems to make us better, to make us feel better, and perhaps to have a realistic look at life. And having been to a few funerals recently, and sadly what happens is as we get older, we tend to go to more funerals. There's a lovely piece in this book by, the poem is by Wendy Cope, and the analysis or the prelim to it is by the editor of this series, William Seacart. And the piece he has written is called Balanced Grief, and then I'll read the poem. I often come across people in my pharmacies who are grieving, but who can't quite understand why their whole world hasn't been destroyed. Why are they still able to function? Why is life still the same in so many ways? Is their reaction wrong? The answer is that these people have a balanced grief, the kind of grief we would all wish for our loved ones. And yet somehow, the great hysteria surrounding death has led them to believe that they are being callous or uncaring. On the other hand, the immensity of death, its permanency and inescapability, can lead us to deify the departed. As a society, we are deeply uncomfortable with death. We push it to the outskirts of our lives, euphemize it, deny its approach. This makes us more comfortable during the good times, but it can also make grief all the more baffling when it looms up to surprise us. We are tempted to idealize those we've lost, to deny their flaws and ultimately their humanity itself. Perhaps this makes it easier to separate them ourselves from them. In Wendy Cope's poem, My Funeral, which I'll read in a minute, we hear a very human, somewhat flawed, and yet deeply reassuring voice from beyond. There's no need to make a scene, it says, no need to grandstand and get caught up in the drama of it all. Give your reading, sing your song, but don't allow yourself to wallow. Get on with life. No one will be scoring you on how desolate you appear. After all, the deceased won't have gone anywhere. She'll still be there in our minds, tutting when you start to hog the limelight or looking pointedly at her watch if you overrun your 5 minutes. She's not a saint and never will be. Instead, she's just the same imperfect person you loved before and whom you still love dearly. Deeply, of course, but within measure. My Funeral by Wendy Cope. I hope I can trust you, friends, not to use our relationship as an excuse for an unsolicited ego trip. I've seen enough of them at funerals, and they make me cross. At this one, though deceased, I am the boss. If you are asked to talk about me for 5 minutes, please do not go on for 8. There is a strict timetable at the crematorium, and nobody wants to be late. If invited to read a poem, just read the bloody poem. If requested to sing a song, just sing it as suggested and don't say anything, though I will not be there, glancing pointedly at my watch and fixing the speaker with a malevolent stare. Remember that this was how I always reacted. When I felt that anybody's speech, sermon or poetry reading, was becoming too protracted. Yes, I was impatient and intolerant and not always polite. And if there aren't many people at my funeral, it will serve me right. Thank you.
So I have a children's story, and I know it's sort of November time to remember our dead, but I've had 3 memorial services so far this week, and Tony Brady sent me this, and I just thought, I need cheering up, and I thought you might like to be cheered up as well. So it's a once upon a time story. There was a town, and there was an invasion of squirrels into the town. And for some reason, the squirrels were very attracted to the places of worship. It was something to do with the rafters and the edge of the balcony that could run along and jump from pew to pew. But the churches were invaded with squirrels. It was making life misery. And then there was a meeting, an interfaith meeting of the clergy, and they were all sort of saying, well, how did you deal with the squirrels? And they were all being politically correct, like we didn't murder any of them, even though we felt like doing it. So the first person to give their solution was the Presbyterians. And the minister says, well, we called a meeting of the elders, and they prayed and discussed it, and then they prayed again. And then they decided that this had been preordained by God and so could not be interfered with. The squirrels had to be left alone in the church. And this explained to many people why they wondered why the Presbyterians always brought an umbrella to Sunday service. The next minister to give his explanation was the Methodist, and they decided, well, they had to protect all God's living creatures. They had to be minded. So they brought humane traps, and they caught the squirrels, drove them out into the countryside, and released them at the edge of a lovely forest. 3 days later, the squirrels were back. The job of trapping and releasing the squirrels is now on their monthly rota that sent around. Next up was the Catholic priest, and the priest seemed to have the best solution so far. He said, well, most people that I come into the church nowadays to me are either funerals. If they're not dead, if it's not a funeral, it's a baptism. So he said, I decided I do what I did with all living creatures, and I took each squirrel, I carefully baptized it, I gave it a Christian name, and I entered the entry in the church baptism. And he says, now I only see them maybe Christmas Day and sometimes Easter. Other than that, they never come near the place. People were a little bit diffident about asking the rabbi, wondering what solution he had come up with. And they said, how are the squirrels with you, Rabbi? And he says, oh, no problem, no problem. He said, they did invade us in hordes in the beginning. And like the Catholic priest, Father Joe, we decided to have an initiation ceremony for them as well. Our initiation ceremony is called circumcision. So we took one squirrel and circumcised it. And not one has been seen around the place since then. I just was cheered up when I read that. Our next hymn this morning is hymn number 101, Abide With Me. Hymn number 101. For my reading, I have chosen a piece. It was written in 1910 by somebody called Edward Carpenter, and his wish was that it would be read at his graveside, but it wasn't found until afterwards. But he says, "Too much, perhaps, is made of death by us little mortals, and I sometimes think that we grieve too much for those that are gone. Of course, the parting from the daily sight and touch of dear friends is hard, but I doubt that this parting is so complete as we sometimes think. Who is there who has not felt the presence of a loved one who has departed? Does it not seem that the loved one is there, only speaking to our hearts more deeply, more intimately, and more tenderly than in ordinary life? Nor need we be afraid of death either for ourselves or our friends, as if it were an evil or harmful thing lying ever in wait for us. On the contrary, surely it is a perfectly natural event and part of the wholesome order of the world, as we see every day in the world around us. Birth does not seem to us an evil thing, but rather a strange and wonderful passage from one state to another. So death, which in many ways is the counterpart of birth, would seem to be just such another wonderful passage out of this world again. This passage is perhaps one of the many, many such passages which the far-journeying soul of man must take under the wing of a never-abiding presence. Nor would one perhaps, even if one were offered, wish to escape dying. For since everyone has to die, and such countless millions have made that passage into the unknown, there would seem to be something mean and unfriendly in trying to avoid the lot of the common people. Better to share it frankly with others, whatever it may be. It is possible that escaping death could turn out to be a considerable loss instead of a gain. Fancy being condemned to live as now forever, to wear out our old body and all our ambitions and our passions, and to go on repeating the same old jokes and stories. What a fate! But from such an end, kindly death does indeed deliver us. And whatever the region to which we pass, love saves us there as it does now. It creates a world in which the soul can live and expand in freedom. The ties which bind us together here are not going to snap so easily as some of you may think. For indeed, I believe that those who we truly love are already joined together in a world far beyond the visible, and in that world they are safe, and their love is safe from the storms of time and misadventure. Therefore, do not think too much of your dead husk of your friend, or mourn too much over it, but send your thought outwards towards the real soul or self that has escaped to reach it. For so surely you will cast a light of gladness upon his onward journey and contribute your part towards the building of that kingdom of love which links our earth to heaven." Lovely words from Edward Carpenter. Let us pray, and this prayer will be followed by a time of silence. God, whom we know as love, help us to recognize the love that surrounds us and on which we have our being. Help us to see ourselves as the loving people we are and can be. In silence now, we bring our mind's eye to the people who have loved us and continue to love us. people who are not here with us today, but whose love we carry with us. We remember people who are here every day and whose love we sometimes take for granted. We remember people who could come within the circle of our love if we could stretch that circle of love a little bit wider. In silence, we keep in our heart all those people who have crossed our minds, and we give thanks for their blessing on our lives. The title of the address today is Do Things Go Bump in the Night? And I have written down here that, of course, you don't have to believe anything I say from this pulpit, me or anyone else, but just maybe keep an open mind and we could have a chat about this over coffee. All over the world, people have created festivals to commemorate their dead ancestors. And there is a remarkable similarity between these celebrations. In ancient Rome, the tradition was that the extended family gathered annually at the family tomb and had a picnic meal in the presence of the ancestors. And I was chatting to a Filipino nurse there last week, and she was saying, in her community, they erect a marquee in the cemetery 1 week at this time of the year, and people bring food to share. It's sort of a potluck food festival. Everyone gathers, the people pray, they put candles on the grave, and the children pray or play around the graves. It's a day-long celebration. And of course, there are festivals in other places, Korea, China, Mexico, and of course, Ireland. Samhain is the Celtic time to remember the dead. That's a time of magic, of horror, of pranks. And it was believed that if the ancestors did not get due honor, their living relatives would be paid the price for neglecting them. As with all important festivals, Samhain was Christianized as the Feast of All Souls, and then on the 1st of November, the Feast of All Saints. And these Catholic festivals are not very important. What is a big celebration within Catholic parishes, particularly in rural Ireland, is Graveyard Sunday, People gather in the graveyard to recite the rosary together. In my hometown, the whole town is a traffic jam on Graveyard Sunday because people who have long moved away return to visit the graveyards. My brother is a very nominal Catholic. It's minimalist, really. But he will attend three different graveyards on the day because family members are buried there. Now, some of the family members are great-great-grandparents. He would never have known them, but he feels that connection. The ancient roots of the festival, the commonality, and the fact that they endure are an indication that this touched something in our psyche that's needed. 19th century emigration from Ireland exported Halloween to America. So not only did Ireland export Halloween to the world, it was Irishman Bram Stoker who created the ever-popular Dracula. And of course, all November, all these Dracula films are rehashed. Ireland is in the top destinations for ghost hunting. And Discover Ireland have a list of the top most haunted houses in Ireland on their website. I was amazed to see that Fogue Williams was talking about her belief in haunted houses and was involved in a program. This is one of those numerous television programs that claim to investigate reports of haunting. And these programs really annoy me because they're always filmed in the dark. They're going to examine something scientifically, but let's do it in the dark where no one can see anything. And the whole thing, I've never watched any of them completely, but it just seems to consist of people in the dark and they shout at each other, "Where are you? Where are you? Did you see that? Did you hear that? Did you hear that? What was it?" Turn the lights on if you want to see what it was. Of course, the great mystery of life is what happens when we take our final breath. Does some part of us survive physical death? Is it possible to have contact with someone who has died? Do spirits come back to contact the living? As a community who prize the use of reason, many Unitarians will answer all of those questions with a very firm no. But to those who believe that, I would say, try and keep an open mind. Or as one Unitarian person said to me, "I'm open to the possibility to being surprised." We're told in Christian teaching that what happens after death is that there is heaven or hell for eternity. Some of us in the Christian tradition were given the third possibility of, or more likely, a probability of a stint in purgatory. Those concepts of up in heaven plucking harp strings or down in hell being tormented by devils are from the dark ages. They're past their sell-by dates. I don't think anyone believes them now. But there are other explanations of what might happen when we die. For example, reincarnation. Indian philosophies say that we are born and reborn until the ultimate attainment of unity with God. It's called moksha in the Hindu tradition and nirvana in the Buddhist tradition. Nirvana is not being reborn again. And these concepts are not familiar to us. But I think they're an awful lot more reasonable to accept than that you go to heaven or hell or that it's just annihilation. And when we might reject the idea of being born and reborn, you know, someone said, to be born once is just amazing. Why not have it repeated? And when you think of those Hindu philosophies, remember the story of the Buddha that told about the Buddha. An excited student came to the Buddha to say he could fly, and the Buddha said, "So too can a gnat." People skilled in meditation develop capabilities our reasoning mind does not have. And it's important to remember that those capabilities are not magic, they're not mumbo jumbo, they are a skill that is practiced over many years. People in the Reformed religions are rooted in Enlightenment thinking, and that's based on science. I believe what I can see, what I can feel, what I can touch. Remember that science didn't stop in the 19th century. It is continuing to develop. One of the things that was on the news last week is that one of the telescopes they've sent up has discovered a spongy planet. And they're saying, now we're going to have to rethink the Big Bang theory. If this spongy planet exists, it doesn't fit with that theory. What's the explanation? We don't know it all yet. And modern physics contradicts some of that reasoning that Unitarians are so attached to. Just look at the pulpit here. We all agree that's solid, it's carved of stone. I see it, I feel it, I touch it. You can see it, feel it, and touch it. But modern physics says that it's not solid matter. There are spaces within that stone. That wasn't known in the 19th century in Western world. It was in these Eastern philosophies. Modern physics also says that everything is connected. And that's what the Indians knew for thousands, for generations. They knew that everything in the world was connected. Hinduism says that humans are spiritual beings having a physical experience at this moment. We're not just blood and bones and sinew. Again, physics confirms that energy cannot be destroyed. It becomes a different form of energy. So we have to ask, what becomes of my energy when I die? Do the dead come back to contact their loved ones or to haunt them? Is it possible for us to contact the dead? Well, I think when we go to these questions, we go on to very shaky ground. Firstly, I say there are unscrupulous people who prey on people who are grieving. And it is incredibly easy for them to do that. It's very easy to make an educated guess about why a person is consulting a psychic. Most of them will be middle-aged women, maybe when a parent dies. And, you know, oh, I'm getting somebody, they're coming through. Is it your mother or your father? I'm not sure. Is it my? And the person says, oh, it's my mother, because they came to hear something about their mother. It's very easy to give away why you are there. And people do prey on it. There are charlatans around. However, I would always say to you that countless millions practice meditation and most will never be able to fly. Doesn't mean that there's some people who can't do it. There are some people. I think that sometimes it is possible to tune into the spirit world. Or more correctly, I think that the spirit world can tune into our world. Like this morning's reading, I think in that tuning in, the dead speak to us, to our hearts, more intimately and more clearly. And that can never be proved, but when a person feels it, they feel it. But how can we be sure it's not imagination? And of course we can't. But those who are experiencing that touch of the heart, it is real, it feels different. And only because I am on the road towards retirement, I'm going to share my ghost story with you. And this is an experience I had. It was when Bill retired and we were searching for a new minister. And a minister came from the UK. He was interested in taking the pulpit here and we were interested in him. And it was in September and he was coming over for a visit and going to take the service on Sunday. And there was a wedding during the week and I said to him, maybe you'd like to come along and sit in and watch the wedding ceremony. So he thought that would be lovely, and he said, look, let's meet for a coffee beforehand. And I went to meet him for the coffee, and he didn't turn up, and that was time for me to prepare for the wedding, so I totally forgot about him. And when you're getting ready for a wedding, you have to be very focused, because you're thinking of what the bride wants, and her mother and his mother, whatever else, 100 things buzzing in your head. So he was totally forgotten by me. And there was a big wedding and a lot of guests were coming up the stairs towards me. And one man, whom I mistook as a wedding guest, put out his hand and shook my hand. And just then I realised, oh, it's him, he's here. He said, I forgot, I got stuck in traffic and I'm very sorry I'm late. And just as our hands touched, I saw a figure to the side. It was a young man dressed in soldier's uniform. He was tall, thin, and he had dark hair. And the figure said to me, this man will never be the minister in Dublin. And I thought, that's interesting. It's something that we'll see the truth of in time. And I did share this with Paul, and we waited to see. And that process with him contacting us, being interested in the job, went on from September until December, when he withdrew from the process. So my ghostly apparition was right, and he never did become the minister in Dublin. Later on, to other circumstances, if anyone wants me to tell them at tea break, I'm happy to, I realised, or I've come to know, that it was one of the two Faulkner boys that I saw the image of. Can I contact the dead? Absolutely not. I can't do it at will. But sometimes I think they can tune in to us. And I don't think that ghosts come to frighten us or to harm us. If you think about it, most human beings are kindly men. They mean kindly. They are capable of doing nasty things. There's generally something else that makes them nasty. It's very, very rarely a person is purely nasty for the sake of it. And I think at this stage, the ghosts come to help us, to comfort us, just to be there. Do things go bump in the night? I don't think so. I don't think there are any ghosts going around throwing things around the house just to make us upset. I do think there might be a upset teenager in the house if that is happening. And if things go bump in your house and you don't have an upset teenager, the best thing to do is to turn the light on and see who's playing the prank. So that's my ghost story. I'd be curious if anyone would like to share one at coffee. And I don't think things go bump in the night, but I do think the energy of people does continue after they die. So now, we're going to have our third hymn, and it's hymn number 53, I Walk the Unfrequented Road. Thank you. Our offertory will now be taken. Our notices, Fair Trade Tea and Coffee are served downstairs. Do please join us. And at 2 p.m., there's a service in the church for an organization that supports people bereaved through suicide. They're called HUG at 2 o'clock, if anyone wanted to stay for that. Next Sunday, the service will be taken by Reverend Brian Moody. Brian is a minister in Dromore in Northern Ireland. He's an interesting background. He comes from South Africa. He became a Methodist minister out there, and then he joined a Buddhist monastery for a while, and now he is a minister in the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church. He'll be here next Sunday. So it'll be interesting to see what Brian has to say. The usual Wednesday service of reflection is available in the church and online. And our choral service will be on the 17th of December, so the choir will begin practicing soon, and they welcome singers to join them to make a beautiful noise on the 17th, and Shari or Gavin is happy to take names if anyone would like to volunteer. We always have a Christmas tree up, and the usual thing would be to have gifts for the Christmas tree, provide gifts wrapped for children, suggested age on them and things like that. But this year is going to be slightly different. We're going to support the Capuchin Day Centre, and I've been in touch with them, and this is what would help them. Hats and gloves and Christmas pyjamas, right? Hats and gloves, great thing for keeping children warm, and Christmas pyjamas, which children love. Now, there's no point in bringing them Christmas Day. So if you can bring them early, their party is on the 17th, and they'll be giving them out the next week. They don't give them at the party, but there's no need to wrap the hats. They want to be able to sort of allocate them age-wise to families. They also give children, families with children, a voucher for €40, and it's for Smith's Toy Shop. And this is just to keep things even and equal among people they're helping. If you wanted to bring a gift voucher for €40, that would be wonderful. If you can't afford €40, don't worry. Money or a voucher for less value, they all can be added together later on to make up the €40. In our support for the Capuchin Day Centre, our services on the Carol Service, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, will be in aid of the Capuchin Centre. Their workload has increased phenomenally. They were catering for 500 lunches every day. Now that number is over 700. It's an awful lot. And they're stretched financially. And we used to have one collection for charity every month. And since COVID, that's gone complicated. So having three of our best supported charities will help the Capuchins. The book club meet on the final Wednesday of November, and everyone is welcome to join that in person in the vestry or via Zoom. And as is my practice for years now, because we remember our dead, I bring along some bulbs to share with people. And the idea behind this is that when people are bereaved, they go through a painful period when life seems really pointless. They feel maybe dead in themselves. And I think they feel like the old daffodil bulb which people plant at this time of the year. It seems lifeless. But when that bulb is placed in the ground, it has to endure the dark there, the cold, the frost, the rain, the wind, and time has to pass. And it will absolutely, certainly blossom in the springtime. Green shoot will force its way through the clay, grow, and then a bud, and then a blossom, but that takes time. And it can seem very difficult to get through the dead time, but I always point out, this is a bulb from the garden I dug up this morning. Its roots have grown, it has shoots on it. It won't blossom for months, but healing and growth is happening. So too with bereavement. There are some bulbs on the table there. There's daffodil bulbs, some tulip bulbs, and I brought plastic bags if people wanted to take them. 3 or 5 is a good number of bulbs to plant together. I think maybe people could have 5. Please help yourself afterwards. We have our final hymn now, and it's hymn number 77, Seek Not Afar for Beauty. Hymn number 77. Our blessing. May we be hopeful gardeners of the Spirit who know that without darkness nothing comes to birth, and without light nothing comes to blossom. Amen.